From Delray Beach, Florida, welcome to Life Change Weekend with Dr. Dino Padrone. Hear the stories of individuals who, through their conversion experiences, books written, ministry served, special truths from Scripture, or trips taken, tell their story. These stories and teachings are life-changing. So thank you for joining us, and get set for some life change. Here is your host, Dr. Dino Padrone.
Thank you so much, David, and welcome into Life Change Weekend. Should the church stay out of politics? Hey, that's a pretty good question, isn't it? I was with a church not long ago where I was preaching, and very seldom did I ever hear something like this, but they said, you know, don't talk about politics. Not that I was going to do that, but our good friend Pastor Bob Kadlecic, who's part of our radio family here, is with us today. And Bob, good to have you on. How you been?
I've been great. Thank you. Yeah, this is fools rush in where angels fear to tread kind of issue.
Well, I'm glad we're dealing with it. I've told you a couple funny stories in my church. I don't know if they're funny or not. They're funny today, I guess. At the time, they weren't so funny. But people get pretty hot over this topic. I remember back a couple years back when we were in the COVID crisis that the joke circling around South Florida was, at your Thanksgiving, don't talk about COVID, don't talk about politics, and certainly don't talk about the shot. Because if you do, you'll lose your family. And I think there was a little bit of truth to that. But hey, I'm delighted we're going into this topic right now. And so let's start with it here, Pastor Bob. Should the church stay out of politics?
Well, that's a really loaded question. And I think the answer is no, it shouldn't stay out of politics. But I think how we enter into politics is important, or how we respond to it. In fact, the church I've been at since 2005, Bridgewater Church, is over 200 years old, and we had a church split. It's weird to say we had a church split in 1839, because none of us were there then, and it was over slavery. Now, slavery wasn't abolished until 1865, but in 1839, the debate wasn't whether slavery was wrong, because everyone in the church agreed slavery is wrong. The debate was, how much does the church get involved in politics on this issue? And the son of the founding pastor, his name was Davis Dimmick, his son was Davis Dimmick, was actually a representative, and he was in the House of Representatives, and he was a Democrat. So Democrats, of course, back then were pro-slavery, or Democrats in the North were for letting the Southerners decide, states' rights kind of thing. And so actually, because our church was so outspoken against slavery, there was one of the associate pastors, Al Post, he was started an abolitionist newspaper that was really popular, and he was actually had a secret room in his home for the a part of the Underground Railroad that he was in. And so occasionally he would have these bounty hunters come to his house and search high and low, because they just knew they're here somewhere, but they could never find them. And so because of this disagreement in the church, there was actually a church split, and the founding pastor, Davis Dimmick, and his son, who was a member of the House of Representatives, split off from the church. And about 4 years later, actually, that son died while in office. And the split was resolved. There was a revival. 105 people were saved and baptized. And about a third of the town, about 500 people, would attend Bridgewater Church on an Easter Sunday. And so, you know, there's a lot of history. I think if we were to go back and if we were to ask today, should Bridgewater Church have stayed out of politics in 1839 and not talked about slavery and not gotten involved in the abolitionist, you know, end slavery movement, I think we would all say, no, the church should have gotten involved. It was good that the church got involved. It was even worth splitting the church over. And I think time can give us that perspective. So the short answer is, should the church stay out of politics? No, I think the church should be involved in politics. But how we do that is a really slippery, difficult thing to figure out.
That's a fascinating story, isn't it?
Yeah, I love history, and there's so much history in this church. Hmm. You know, if you go to a church that's over 200 years old, I don't think anyone can really say we've always done it this way.
Yeah. So, well, you know, it's interesting in this whole conversation. I know back when in 2016 election, when I would travel to churches, many times I would be asked about who's running for the office and what my view was. And I think different years it's like that. So let's talk a little bit about, should a church promote a particular candidate or party, and how do you handle that in your church?
Yeah, we never say this is who you should vote for a couple reasons. Number one, I found that people generally don't listen anyway. But more importantly, because we don't want promoting a political party in the church to create a barrier to the unsaved. Too many churches have a reputation of only welcoming one political party into their church, and I don't think that's right. We do put out voter guides. They highlight key biblical issues that help people see where the politicians stand on those issues, and then we really think that helps them decide who they should vote for. But Democrats, Republicans, Independents, they all need Jesus as their Lord and Savior, and they need to know that following Jesus will affect them politically, because following Jesus affects everything in our lives. But to send the message that Jesus stands on one side or another, I think it is not really accurate, because Jesus is on his own side. And the first thing we got to do is to decide, do I stand with him? And we can't have a blind allegiance to a political party. And here's how you know you have a blind allegiance: if your political party is never wrong and is right and godly in everything that they believe and do. Mm. because we all know no one's perfect. There's no perfect people. There's no perfect political parties. And there is no party in America or in any other country on earth right now whose beliefs are indistinguishable from the Bible. And this isn't just an American problem. When I was in India, I was preaching outside to maybe 100 Christians, and my sermon was titled, How to Make India Great. And I remember several Hindus stopping in the street to listen, because they thought, this is really strange. We have an American talking to a couple hundred Indians about making their country great. But I quickly got to Jesus, because I was saying, following Jesus means becoming like Jesus, which means becoming the best possible version of you that you can possibly be. And if you are a godly, obedient to God person, there's a salty, preservative, beneficial, positive impact that will have on a community, on a nation, on a culture. And so these Hindus, they stopped to listen. But then when I started talking about Jesus, that was what the offense was. And then they just kind of kept walking at that point. But it's important to make Jesus the real question, not your political affiliation. In fact, just one more thing along these lines that I think was really insightful was C.S. Lewis, in his book Screwtape Letters. The senior demon there has a demonically brilliant instruction to the rookie demon. He says, it is very important to get someone, the person that you're after, he needs to become a Christian plus. That junior demon had already lost his man to Jesus Christ. And Screwtape said, no, we have another idea. Make him a Christian plus a Republican, or a Christian plus something else. Because if you can tie someone's Christianity to something else, then when that other thing is discredited, he may throw them both out. And so if you're a Republican Christian and the Republican Party or candidate does something evil or abandons the beliefs you cherish or whatever, then if you're a Republican Christian, then you may be tempted not only to disown the Republican Party, but reject Christianity as well, because you've tied your faith to something that isn't Jesus. Jesus doesn't run for political office. Flawed, imperfect people do. And attaching the God of the Bible to a flawed person or an imperfect political party lowers and debases God. And we just can't do that.
Yeah, that's a very good answer. And I think what you're saying there, Pastor Bob, really is a very helpful piece for our listeners. You're listening into Life Change Weekend. This is Dino Padron talking to you. Pastor Bob Kadlecic is on with us, and we're talking about politics in the church. This is a very lively topic for many people. Many people have various opinions. And so let's stretch this just a little bit further here, Pastor Bob. Should a Christian always vote for a Christian president or representative?
I think a Christian should vote for the person whose beliefs and actions line up the closest to that of Jesus. And that sounds like a yes, but it's not necessarily a yes, because first of all, some people claim to be Christians, but they don't live or act anything like Jesus. You know, in fact, I'm very cynical. If someone says, I'm a Christian, vote for me, that doesn't really mean a lot to me. Even in our country, Obama, Trump, Clinton, Bush, Biden, all of them claim to be Christians, but their actions and beliefs are radically different. And so even if I know personally someone is actually a real Christian, that doesn't necessarily mean that everything they believe lines up with what God's word teaches. We see this in the church. Not everyone who's a Christian in the church has right beliefs about everything or right actions. So we need to vote for the person whose beliefs and actions are the closest to that of Jesus. And so this sounds counterintuitive, but I could see myself voting for a Hindu or a Jew in certain situations, because there's never going to be a perfect representative. And it may be that a Hindu has beliefs or actions that are closer to Jesus than the other candidate of who that might be. And I do think actions are more important than beliefs, but public policy actions that impact millions are more important than personal actions that impact only a few.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, but sometimes we have to try to decide which is the greater sin.
Mm-hmm.
I think a good example of this is Giorgia Meloni, who was elected prime minister of Italy in 2022, which is like their president. And she championed and wanted to encourage Italians to get married and have kids. She was pro-family, but she herself had a daughter with her boyfriend out of wedlock. They weren't married. So biblically, the Bible would say she's a fornicator. She's engaging in sexual immorality. But her policies sought to discourage that behavior that she did and incentivize marriage. So even though she wasn't acting like Jesus, she was more like Jesus than most of her opponents in that one area. And there are lots of other issues, and I don't even know Italian politics to even wade into those, but at least in that one area, her actions at her job in being the leader of Italy was more like Jesus than her opponents, even though she may have been less like Jesus in her actual life. And so this is a difficult thing. It's a matter of wisdom on who to vote for in a situation like that. But I would say I would vote for the one who's more like Jesus in their job that they're being elected to than in their personal life. It's debatable, but I see that as kind of like the greater sin is promoting sin and immorality on a large scale that affects millions of people, I think is a greater sin than doing it on a small scale and just affecting a few people around you.
Yeah, this is a very interesting topic today, and a very, I guess, controversial topic too with many, but I'm so glad that we're addressing it. You're listening into Life Change Weekend. This is Dino Padron chatting with you with Pastor Bob Kadlecic. I want to remind you about our Bible studies every Monday through Friday, and depending on where you listen from, concerning the time when we're on, We appreciate so much all of our friends in the northeast of America with James Baker and the Montrose Broadcasting Network. We're delighted for those in with Mission Go and their new president there, Dennis Campbell, and being on all of those areas with the live streams and so forth. We're delighted to be on. And then we're glad to have those in Africa that are listening in. And Michael over there, thank you so much for all you do at the station and getting us on all of these nations. It's our great privilege to be a part of all of that. You mentioned it's hard to determine who to vote for because some sins are greater than others. I can hear some of the listeners and asking the question, well, isn't all sin equal?
Yeah, I think that's a common thought, but Jesus said all sin is not equal on several occasions. He told Pilate this at his trial. He said, because your authority was given to you by God, the one who handed me over, which would have been Judas Iscariot, he is guilty of the greater sin. That's John 19:11. He also said at another point, I think Matthew 11:24, he said, because of the miracles done in Capernaum, it will be more bearable for Sodom on the day of judgment than for you. So he's saying Capernaum is going to be judged more than Sodom. So clearly some sin is worse than others, and some judgment then is worse than others. But I think the problem we need to be aware of is that we are not good at determining which sins are greater than others. In fact, myself, if you were to ask me, which is worse, the lack of faith in Capernaum or the homosexual violence of Sodom, I would say the homosexual violence of Sodom. But Jesus said, no, it was the lack of faith in Capernaum. And so Jesus was even more condemning of the pride of the Pharisees than he was of the stealing that the tax collectors did and the immorality of the prostitutes that he hung out with. So this gets back to one of the reasons why, as a pastor, I don't tell people who to vote for. In fact, there was one election where I almost did, and I had a fellow pastor who pulled me back from the cliff and said, why would you change now? Because sometimes it is clear, but sometimes it takes wisdom to pick the best of the worst who are running for political office, because we're just all sinners.
Yeah, in America, we have the privilege of voting, which is a blessing. Mm-hmm. This program goes to places in the world which is not like that. So it's troubled as America is. I think there is a sense of things that we need to look at as encouragements and blessing. We still have a vote. We hope they're counted right, I guess, but we still have a vote. And there are a lot of things like that that are so good. Some people would say that you can't legislate morality. That's something that I've heard for years and years. I remember back in the late 1970s, early 1980s, when a lot of Christians were helping with the political process. That was a popular thing for the other side to say, you can't legislate morality. What's your position on that? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, not only can you legislate morality, but morality is about the only thing that should be legislated. If you think about it, I mean, is murder immoral? I mean, yes, and that's why there's laws, legislation against murder. To say you can't legislate morality is to say you can't pass laws against stealing and all sorts of terrible things. But, you know, even things that are minor, building regulations, they're based on the immorality of building something defective or dangerous and then someone getting hurt. So we do need to actually legislate morality. That's the whole point of any law, hopefully, is to encourage something that's right and discourage something that's wrong. But there is a legitimate debate about what sins a society should punish and what sins a government should not penalize. And I think the 10th commandment is a good illustration of that. Thou shalt not covet. I don't think the government should punish or legislate against coveting because it's a thought crime. How do you know what someone's thinking, whether they've coveted or not? And so there's definitely some sins that we shouldn't have laws against, but I think many sins we actually do have laws against, and that's a good thing. And there are other things that probably should be made illegal, and that would be good as well. But in fact, I told you to ask this question, so because I wanted to, legislating morality, I think we have become a society of thoughtless slogans. of things like you can't legislate morality or my body, my choice. And these things sound cool on the surface, but when you really think about them, there's nothing to them. They don't make any sense. Like my body, my choice is about an issue that doesn't deal with a woman's body at all. It's a baby's body, and so it shouldn't be your choice. In fact, that slogan was then co-opted by people opposing the wearing of masks during the pandemic, and they're saying, my body, my choice, I'm not going to wear a mask. But it doesn't really help that debate either, because it's just a slogan. It's shallow. It's something you throw at someone that sounds cool to help you maybe win a debate. It has nothing to do with babies. It has nothing to do with airborne water droplets. And we have accumulated as a culture a lot of these meaningless slogans that nobody really thinks about. Love is love. Okay, that obviously that's true, because paint is paint and up is up and down is down. But they're not really talking about love. They're talking about the desire for sex and companionship. But the saying romantic companionship is romantic companionship, it just doesn't have the spark. You know, so the thoughtless, meaningless slogan is used. And the church and Christians, we just need to tell the biblical truth. No matter which political party gets offended, we need to do it in a loving, kind, and tender way. But we need to tell the truth, because society prospers when evil is penalized and good is encouraged. And that's called legislating morality. And that's the point of government, to punish the wrong and encourage the good, or in the very least, leave the good alone and just try to serve and help make a better society.
I remember, again, back in the 1970s and 80s, when I was very involved with some organizations, that was always an issue that was thrown around. But you're right. I mean, we have to have laws, and what are laws based upon? Well, they need to be based upon truth. Where does truth come from? It comes from a standard of the scriptures. Our time is about up here, Pastor Bob. This has been a fascinating topic. Just give us a final summary for us about Christians and politics.
Well, yeah, this world is not going to change from the top down. Elections are not going to change our nation, not going to change other countries either. Jesus said in Matthew 28:18, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. And he wasn't exaggerating. He had all the authority. He could do anything. He could have started an army. He could have begun a political party, and it would have been unstoppable. All authority, all power. But what did he do? He didn't do any of that. He started the church. He said, I'm going to start the church, and our orders are to make disciples, baptize, and teach people to obey everything he commanded. And so people today, many of them think the best plan is top down. Jesus's plan is the opposite. It's bottom up. It's from the heart outward, because that's where the real problem is. And so if you live in a democracy, you get the leader you deserve. And that's the problem, because wicked people have wicked leaders. But if we truly want to change the world, we shouldn't go off on our own strategy. We need to stick with the plan that Jesus had. Tell others about Jesus, one person at a time, and we will change the world. If you change a life, you change a family. If you change families, you can change a community. If you change communities, you can change a culture. You change a culture and you change the leaders of that culture. You change the leaders and you change the laws. And Jesus wants us to change the world from the inside out, from the bottom up. And we shouldn't abandon that strategy, because it's slow and hard. It's slow because God's patient. It's slow because we're so stubborn. But his strategy is working, and it's better than anything we can come up with. In fact, I would agree that the church is not advancing in America, but the church is advancing all over the world, and it's growing, and it's a privilege and so exciting to be a part of an organization literally in every country, of every race, millions of people, and the only hope this world has. Don't settle for winning an election when God's calling us to win and change people's hearts and lives.
Well said, Pastor. Great topic today. Again, you've been listening into Life Change Weekend. Our guest has been Pastor Bob Kadlecic from Bridgewater Ministry here in Montrose, Pennsylvania. To all of our listeners everywhere, thank you for listening in. Thanks so much. So many of you sent emails and notes in. We appreciate so much hearing from you. Have a blessed, blessed weekend.
You have been listening to Life Change Weekend. Life Change is brought to you through the International Dino Padron Ministry, which includes radio, television, live stream programming, podcasts, literature, online education, the support of indigenous ministries, and progressive approaches to help people grow their faith. To receive our complimentary monthly newsletter, send your postal or email address to dinopadrone@gmail.com or dinopadroneministries.org. That's dinopadrone@gmail.com or dinopadroneministries.org. Stay tuned to our weekday Bible study, Monday through Friday. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be with you next week on Life Change Weekend.